Here we go. All right, we're jumping right in. This is Night of the Living Dreads podcast, and this is episode 14. I am Otis B. Dreads, and as you heard, we do again, Malice is not here. Just had a baby girl last week, and then there was, the week before Thanksgiving. And then Thanksgiving, so he's a little pooped, if you will. So we got my good friend Bobby, who was on last week's episode, talking about Vlad. Bobby, welcome again.
Hey, thanks, brother.
Hey, thank you for sitting in.
It's good to be here. A little bit different of a topic this time.
It is. Versus Vlad. We are going to talk a little bit about Ted Bundy. And I just want to preface this that we are not going to be talking about, you know, all the details of Ted Bundy's, you know, murderous rampage, which they said spanned. What was it like? Seven states. Yeah, seven states in like a 4 or 5 year period. We're not going to go into detail about that.
Yeah, those stories are out there.
They're out there, and if you're interested in all the gory details of that, well, it's out there. What we want to do tonight, is take and go into the mind of Ted Bundy. But before we do that, because we always have a little musical interlude, but I have to give a shout out to a lot of our brothers and sisters over there at gorehoundsofhorror.com. I almost said door hounds. What is that?
No clue.
Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Come check us out, man. There's such a great group of guys and ladies over there. Come check them out. And you can also check out this podcast as well as all the 13 previous disasters. and over there at nightoflivingdreads.com. And that's Dreads with no A. Don't put that. It's just Dreds. So with all of the love being spread there, serial killers, they're always seems and me and Malice, and you've been on the show for about three shows now, the Halloween, the Vlad, and then this one.
Yeah, always fun.
It's always fun here, man. We have a good time here in the Insane Asylum. But we, you know, when this podcast first started, we talked a lot about serial killers. And, you know, I have always been interested in the inner workings of a serial killer. Why did they, some of them grow up in a very loving home, some of them grow up in a very abusive, violent home. There are different backgrounds to these serial killers. There are different, well, in a sense, personalities. Okay. Now that's a slippery slope. That's thin ice right there, because right. A lot of them do have a lot of the same personality traits, that is.
Right.
But there's a lot of common threads, man. And our topic tonight, as you mentioned in the very beginning.
Yes.
Ted Bundy.
Yeah, I was just wondering how it took so long to get to Bundy.
How it did take a while, because we've been pondering hitting, or I have pondering hitting record. But well, Ted Bundy's kind of a different character.
Yeah.
When it comes to the whole spectrum of your quote unquote infamous.
Oh yeah. I mean, they all share common bonds. That's what's intriguing about. I know you look into serial killers, and you know I do too, and you always got the same questions. You know, how could you possibly look out for something like this? Because they are the ultimate manipulators, and Ted Bundy was like the best of the best of them.
He really was.
Yeah.
And some of this, you know, some of the other common threads is, you know, they have, well, one, that being the manipulator.
Yes.
Two, they kind of blend in sometimes.
Yeah.
Gacy was very prominent in his community.
Yeah.
Held fundraisers, did children's parties.
Yeah.
His the parents of the parties for the children that he did was, you know, they trusted him.
Yeah. So convincing and manipulative, like even
absolutely.
Gary Ridgway.
And this seems to be a common threat.
Gary Ridgway, the police came to his house on a tip. They had his vehicle spotted at his house. They went up and questioned him, and since he was a family man and such a good manipulator, they left and never questioned him again. He went on killing.
Don't give too much away.
Yeah. That's just
that's going to be a topic, not next week, but the week after. Yeah. Already got a plan.
Yeah, he's
that's
an interesting
Green
character.
River killer.
Yeah, maybe that'll be a good lead way into it.
Because it kind of is, because, you know, Bundy, well, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
You know, this is our time to get loose.
Yeah.
If we haven't enough already. Anyway. But Bundy really stands out. When you, and this is how my simple mind works. All right. I'll take and look at John Wayne Gacy with or without the clown makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And be like, yeah, I could probably picture him doing some really heinous crimes.
Yeah.
I look at the Son of Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I have that infamous, you know, a video of him in the back of the cop car and just looking and smiling. He's in awe.
Yeah.
And I can say, yeah, I could probably see old Berkowitz doing something.
Yeah.
Okay.
They all smile.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah.
Okay. Looks just like a beaten down little boy, even as an adult. I can picture that.
Right.
Ted Bundy does not, to me anyway, fit that perception with me. What about you?
Oh, like we were talking before, mm-hmm. He was comparing him to Rob Lowe. He does look like Rob Lowe.
He does.
He's an attractive guy, very educated, really super smart. That's what made him so good at what he did.
What enabled him to manipulate people so
exactly.
well. For one, he, you know, was a psychology student. He you know, studied how people thought and, you know, the law.
Yeah. Yeah, he's studying to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
You have all of that. You have this charm, this charisma. Yeah. These good looks.
Drove a really fly car. Well, maybe not that one.
the VW bug. Yes. And we checked out because we were talking about you know, some old, like, you know, all these old artifacts from real murder scenes, and one came up, Ted Bundy's Volkswagen, and that's in an Alcatraz murder museum or something of that nature. That is not verbatim, so don't look. I mean, if you look that up, you may find it.
Yeah.
It's, but, and, yeah.
It somehow got connected with Alcatraz. Who knows?
Go figure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Because he died in Florida, I think it was.
Yeah.
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, all right, with that being said, before we get too much into what we're going to talk about, before the break, we have to take a break. And
all right.
I have not yet, I'm doing this on the fly, I have not yet found a tune or an internet. Maybe I'll just find some news clippings or news reports or something on Ted Bundy to get people primed during the break. Well, you have a suggestion, Bobby?
Yeah, you can even maybe play one of his 10-minute interviews or something.
Absolutely.
So
I don't
people
know
can
about...
hear it out of his own mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
How smart, you know, articulate he really was.
Absolutely. So you don't think that we're like blowing him up? Because this was, as we'll get into, this was a very smart...
They come from all walks of life. This goes to show you.
He's a different walk of life. Yeah. He really is. So with that, here's your mystery break interlude. I want to thank Bobby again for sitting in for Malice. Well, hopefully we can get Malice back next week. And you're always welcome on the podcast, my friend. But next week we will be talking about, I got to put it out there because it is a listener suggestion. H.P. Lovecraft, the horror writer. I don't know a lot about him. Do you know?
I never heard of him until you mentioned
really,
him.
Really? Yeah. And I've heard of the name Lovecraft before. Right. I do not know anything about him. So I'm going into a blind, going to learn something new, which is always great. Excuse me?
Did he go by the last name Humphrey by any chance?
I have no clue. Just as I said, I really don't. I don't know nothing about him. Yeah. You could be right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know. Interesting to look up and
see where you may be going. All right, but at any rate, that's for another podcast. Yes, H.P. Lovecraft. I'm excited to learn about him. I don't know a lot about him. I want to thank Drew, who's a member of Gorehounds over there at Facebook, Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. They have a page and they have a group. The group requires myself as one of the moderators and the other moderators and admins to perform a sacrifice in the woods using small farm animals. And determining whether you get in depends on the color of the flame that the animal emits. So hopefully you get the right color flame. But anyway, it's not really that difficult. We just like doing those kind of things. It's fun.
Nice.
I mean, talking about serial killers, we like to kill animals.
Yeah,
not really. I love animals.
Out there killing Captain Crunch. Ain't nothing I hate worse than a serial killer. I like cereal.
You were a serial killer. You are a serial killer. You what? Tell us about it.
Killed a bowl of Rice Krispies the other night.
Whole box.
Yep, killed it.
Done.
Snap, crackle, and pop.
So, who would have ever thought that on Night of the Living Dreads podcast we'd have an actual serial killer?
We all are sometimes. We just don't like to admit it.
With the right medication.
Sometimes Captain Crunch kills me. Sometimes it cuts the roof of my mouth.
Oh. Oh man, that is some horrible shit, right? Yeah,
it
there.
Fights back.
Oh, Captain Crunch does fight back. All right, so see how we get off on these tangents. It's like Malice never left because, you know, this is how we do. All right, I'm Otis B. Dreads, and we got a special sit-in guest, and again, he's becoming a regular, Bobby, on the show, talking Ted Bundy. We'll be back right after these messages. Who the fuck is sponsoring this?
Brought to you by Procter & Gamble.
Carl's Jr. All right, we'll be back.
I grew up in a wonderful home with two dedicated and loving parents, one of five brothers and sisters. A home where we as children were the focus of my parents' lives, where we regularly attended church, two Christian parents who did not drink, they did not smoke, there was no gambling, there was no physical abuse or fighting in the home. That basically, I was a normal person. I wasn't some guy hanging out in bars or a bum. I wasn't a pervert in the sense that, you know, people look at somebody and say, I know there's something wrong with them and just tell. I mean, I was essentially a normal person. I had good friends. I led a normal life, except for this one small but very potent and very destructive segment of it that I kept very secret and very close to myself and didn't let anybody know about it. And part of the shock and horror for my dear friends and family years ago when I was first arrested was that there was no clue. They looked at me and they looked at the all-American boy. And it happened in stages, gradually. It doesn't necessarily, not to me at least, happen overnight. My experience with, I say pornography generally, but with pornography that deals on a violent level with the sexuality, is that once you become addicted to it, and I look at this as a kind of addiction, like an addiction, you keep craving something which is harder, something which gives you a greater sense of excitement, until you reach the point where the pornography only goes so far. You reach that jumping off point where you begin to wonder if maybe actually doing it will give you that which is beyond just reading about it or looking at it. Listen, I'm no social scientist and I haven't done a survey. I mean, I don't pretend that I know what John Q. Citizen thinks about this. But I've lived in prison for a long time now. And I've met a lot of men who were motivated to commit violence just like me. And without exception, every one of them was deeply involved in pornography without question, without exception, deeply influenced and consumed by an addiction to pornography. There's no question about it. The FBI's own study on serial homicide shows that the most common interest among serial killers is pornography. Those of us who have been so much influenced by violence in the media, in particular pornographic violence, are not some kinds of inherent monsters. We are your sons and we are your husbands. And we grew up in regular families. And pornography can reach out and snatch a kid out of any house today. He snatched me out of my home. It snatched me out of my home 20, 30 years ago. And as diligent as my parents were, and they were diligent in protecting their children, and as good a Christian home as we had, and we had a wonderful Christian home, there is no protection against the kinds of influences that are loose in the society that tolerates.
Shit. We're back. All right, Night of the Living Dreads. I'm Otis B. Dreads, and I have special sit-in guest for Malice, who is taking some well-needed rest. I mean, yeah. A week before Thanksgiving, his beautiful daughter is born. Well, actually, it was just a little less than a week, but at any rate. And then you have Thanksgiving, and then, and you know, yeah, trying to work on top of that. Malice is tired.
I bet.
And, yeah, he asked me if it'd be okay, you know. No, he didn't ask me. I mean, he's just like, look, I'm going to have to back out this week. And that's fine. No worries. Because I got my good friend, dear friend, Bobby over here. And we're going to talk some Ted Bundy. Before we get into that, just make sure you go to GoreHoundsOfHorror.com, Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook, Night of the Living Dreads on Facebook, and NightOfTheLivingDreads.com. I got over there at Gorehounds, just so I can get this, yeah, but because I get scatterbrained a lot of times, and all the time, and you know, this was something that there was a, because we are again talking about Ted Bundy, and there was a Ted Bundy post by a lady over there at Gorehounds, who I will only name Marie, because, well, that's what she goes by. But at any rate, she posted the Ted Bundy, and I can't remember the specifics of the meme. It was, you know, kind of a funny one. And she mentioned, oh, this probably shouldn't be funny to me, but, you know, my mom was almost picked up by Ted Bundy. I was like, what? You know, are you serious? And, well, she was very serious, to the point that she actually had her mom. It was her mom and her aunt. Good job, dog. Dog just knocked, I mean, completely blew my concentration by kicking the ashtray off the couch. But at any rate, her mom sent her a message, because I had asked Marie. I was like, well, I mean, you know, is there anything that you, if there's anything that you can tell me about this, just message me. So she went and talked to her mom. And this is what her mom had to say. Wow. Bobby, wow.
I'm sorry, man.
her mom states it was 1975, and this is not verbatim, but I'm gonna, well, I guess I can read it as if it were, you know, being written to Marie. All right, it was 1975, me and your aunt, I won't put her name out there, were living in student housing with three other women while we attended BYU, of course, in Utah. I was walking home from class one night, and I was still on campus when a tan-colored beetle pulled up next to me. There was a young guy with dark hair driving, and he asked me if he could give me a ride home. I told him no. In fact, I didn't need to stop. In fact, I didn't even stop walking. So she didn't stop, bend over, look into, you know, the passenger window, try and hear more what, you know, this guy was saying. She wasn't, you know, interested at all. But he continued to drive alongside of me and asking if he could give me a ride and where she lived. Wanted to know where she lived and, you know, if he could give her a ride. I finally got mad and told him no, and his response was to tell me that I didn't need to be scared of him because he was a law student. when I still refused, he drove away. Now, first of all, we'll start with that because there is the story that I believe her mom recounts from her aunt, or maybe I'm just reading it wrong, but her aunt also has a story in a different location, I think in the same area, but it's pretty surreal. Can you imagine if your mom, you know, was almost picked up by such a notorious, infamous serial killer, just a deranged human being that you may not, I mean, and I speak, you know, for Marie, she may not even be alive if her mom would have gotten that car and said, yeah, I could use a ride home or whatnot. Being in that mid-70s era, it was kind of, you know, hip and cool, and you hitchhiked and you did things that, you know. Right. I mean, your thoughts on that, what we've you know, gone over so far.
Well, I could say she should definitely pat herself on the back for outsmarting somebody who's a serious manipulator.
Oh,
not too many people got away from him. Most people fell for his tricks. So, yeah, she really trusted a good instinct, and he was trying to use his against her for what he wanted.
Right.
And, you know, it's obviously a totally believable story. It motivated him every day. That's what he did every day. He went around looking for victims. That's what he wanted.
And she, you know, I guess by the graces of her mother, I was, you know, she sent me a picture of her mother.
Yeah.
And I showed you because we were talking about this, and you know what? It's almost a spitting general image of every person this maniac picked up.
They really do all look very similar. Some of them look identical.
Absolutely.
He had a type.
I mean, when it came to looks, it was brown, you know, a lot of them brown hair. It could have been like a sandy blonde, dirty blonde, I think they call it.
Yeah.
But it was always parted down the middle and straight hair.
Always long hair.
And that was exactly the picture that she sent to me of her mom. Now, her mom also recounts her aunt's story when she says your aunt talked with Ted Bundy. It was outside the Pioneer Drive-In in Provo. I don't know if that is Provo. Okay, it's in Utah. She had gone to the laundromat and was on her way home when she stopped at the payphone outside the drive-in to call home. She parked close to the phone booth and locked her car when she got out. Very, very, you know, just that was instinct. Right. You get out of the car, you got your car, you know, you lock, whatever. Well, anyway, let me scroll down a little bit. She had barely got inside the phone booth and put her change on the counter when she noticed a tan-colored Beetle pull up behind her. Not terribly close, but close enough to easily walk up to the phone booth. She got an uneasy feeling, and instead of making her call home, she collected her change and walked very fast to the car. She had just barely gotten inside and locked her car door when she looked up and there was a man standing outside her car door. He knocked on her window and asked her to roll it down. She rolled it down about an inch, not too far, you know, and asked what he needed. He told her he was lost and asked if she could help him find his way. Marie's mother states, I can't remember where she said he was looking for, but she told him how to get there without rolling down her window anymore or unlocking the door. So she was very, very cautious. Only about an inch, rolled down, doors locked. He thanked her and told her she was very pretty. That's creepy. And asked if she wanted to come sit in his car and talk with him. When she said no, he said he would talk to her outside the car and ask if she could roll down the window some more. She said no again and told him she needed to leave. When she got home, she told me, which was Marie's mom, her, you know, these are sisters, about it, and how she just thought that he seemed really creepy, which I just mentioned. And I told her that I had talked to him too, because apparently this creepiness was something that you just couldn't get away from if you had met this person before. It wasn't until we saw him on the news when he was in Salt Lake that we really thought maybe we had dodged the bullet.
For sure.
That is a very, very, you know, terrifying story, you know, to, you know, have to, well, one, to have to go through it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's crazy.
In hindsight, knowing what could have happened.
Wow. And we're going to talk a little bit about what could have happened, unfortunately. Right. But I want to thank Marie over there, a fellow hound over there, Gore Hounds of Horror on Facebook.
It's an interesting story.
Thank you, and thank you to your mom for allowing us to talk about that story, because to me it was surreal even knowing somebody who has a mother who was approached by a serial killer of such notorious and such infamy. For lack of better words,
right.
You know, and I even told her, you know, wow, I can't imagine what you're taking, how surreal it must be for you to realize that, hey, I may not even be here, and all due to Ted Bundy. Anyway, let's get into Ted Bundy.
All right. Some Ted Bundy. Something that you'll definitely know where
do you start?
I don't know. There's so many places.
There are. Let's talk. And as we heard in our break, which was his last interview, just a few hours after that interview you heard during our break, he was executed. It was later that morning, late, you know.
Yeah.
So, and you heard his own words. You know, there was no alcohol drank. There was no violence. It was a very Christian family. His upbringing was very, very, I guess,
traditional and normal.
Leave it to Beaver, you know.
He was
Ward.
He was being raised pretty much in the 50s and 60s,
yeah.
The early 60s.
Right.
Born in 46, is that right?
Yes.
So yeah, that would be pretty typical. A lot of families were going to church, and you know, it was a little bit Leaver to Beaverish.
It was.
So yeah.
So not really. You know, we hear a lot with you know other serial killers. You know, we always think, oh well, they just had a bad upbringing, and their father beat them, so that therefore they portrayed violence, or their mother abandoned them. Right. And no, this didn't happen with Ted.
And it seems like in a lot of cases that we look at, it really isn't the case.
And his real last name, let's just get that out there, Theodore Robert Crowell, or Cowell.
Right.
It was not Bundy. It was not, you know, Bundy until later on, which these are also details we're not going to get into, because I think it's much more interesting if you go to YouTube, and I will put this in the description. You can watch a video called Ted Bundy in His Own Words, and he talks, you know, about these kind of things, man. And you know, it's It's very strange, man, how one can go from just a Christian good warden, you know, I don't June Cleaver, you know, type family, and then next thing you know, man, you're murdering people.
Yeah, because that's the way we tend to look at it, that the Leave It to Beaver, the stuff came first, and serial killers are something that is just a recent thing or something.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the Leave It to Beaver stuff is actually more out of place with reality than the serial killer is to humanity. The serial killers have been around forever.
Yes.
There's certain things that drive all of them that I'm sure we discovered. You know, and mainly being sexual drive,
which is there's a lot of that,
which is just one of those instincts that even today people have a hard time fighting with reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about before the show about how they just show a lack of reason, that they are just all instinct, animalistic instinct, and killing doesn't mean nothing to them. They can smile when they're sitting there after they've been caught,
right?
You know, they don't really show emotion.
Yeah,
you know.
They're having a good time. Yeah. It's their show is almost, you know, and you know, we want you people, you listeners, you people,
you.
We want you guys to, you know, go and you know, look this up, because we're not going to give you every little, you know, you can see what we're talking about when we say you can see him smile, the videos, you know, in court and whatnot. We're just trying to spark that intrigue, and I think we're on the right path.
About finding out whether or not if what is in serial killers is indeed in all of us. You know, that maybe some of us have just been through time, society has changed us, we've lived within the bounds of law and reason, whereas some people that's just shut off to.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me like sexual serial killers, which almost all of them are.
Yeah. Ted Bundy himself said that the FBI's own statistics, and he was a student of law. He was not a lawyer, but he was a student of law. He knew his stuff.
Yep.
He was a very intelligent guy. Even said FBI's own statistics state that one of the common threads, which we touched on the beginning of the show, is pornography.
An addiction to pornography.
An addiction to pornography through serial killers.
Yeah, it's the pornography would almost seem to be an outlet to them for something that they would rather get in the real world. Like, rather there was porn there or not, I still think, personally, I think that they would probably still be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes it more real to them, I think.
Right.
Something that they can fascinate about all the time.
Right.
Because even people who don't rape the victims will admit after they were caught that they would masturbate about thinking about it for weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
There was sexual gratification in the violence.
Yeah.
And Bundy, you know, later on in life, at points in his life, would go to slasher films, slash, all pun intended, sex, you know, just sex violence, you know, he called them, and I quote unquote slasher films,
right,
is what he called them.
Yeah.
And he would go to them, and he, you know, it would arouse him to a point to maybe he would go out and murder that night.
Yeah. Murder would actually get him sexually aroused.
Yeah.
And so committing the actual act would be the ultimate. And he could probably live off of that for a week, 2 weeks, and he'd have to do it again. It seems to be a common theme through all of them.
And not only that, Bobby, you know, he has also said, again, in this video, and anybody interested in, you know, the case, the life of Ted Bundy, and maybe not so more the life other more than the case with this particular video, but Ted Bundy, in his own words, you have to watch. It's only about like 45 minutes. It's not a long video, but he states what? Hold on. Again, completely forgot what I was where I was going with that.
I do it all the time.
Man, it's horrible. This makes for a great podcast.
He's talking about the pornography side of it. Oh. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I don't know. Why? So
I was listening.
I know. So was I. Hell, I was saying it. Anyway, hold on. Yeah, no.
Gia. I was just, that's the reason I always looked into serial killers. Why I do like to look at them, into them. I still do Jack the Ripper and Zodiac to this day. I'm still fascinated. I'm in the online groups for that stuff. I like to try to play Mr. Afterwards Detective, even though I can't. I can't go to San Francisco, but I still do it. It's enjoyable. It's just trying to get into their heads.
Right.
And finding out, man, if this is a natural inherited instinct thing, then that means you can never get rid of it. There's always going to be people like this no matter what you do.
Which also means that possibly all of us, as you have mentioned, previously, have this natural instinct too.
Yeah.
It's not simply fight or flight.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of years of killing your own meat, killing your enemy who's coming into your territory. Men were born to kill, and women do it too these days,
right.
Which is weird. The female serial killer phenomenon is bizarre to me, because what are they doing it for? And they're very few, though.
There are.
And it seems like most of the time it's used as something as a vendetta or something like that, rather than these people who just want to go out for a sexual thrill to actually kill people. That's a phenomenon itself. But it's been going on for a long time, and
right.
I think that's where it comes from. I think it's just instinctual. If you put something into people's brains with hereditary, I don't know how you would say it, because I'm all ate up too. But, through heredity, how do you say it?
Right.
But if that builds up over 100,000 years, what does it do to you? Can you actually make a law that's going to drive that out of a person? It won't. But along with that, we build up reason and, some intelligence, and knowing that hurting people is not a good thing. We feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people are just cut off to that reason completely. And they can smile when they're killing. It gives them a thrill. They enjoy it. They're just objectifying the shit out of people so much that a person to them is... Killing them is no different than cutting open a box.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything to them. Their manipulation is just to feed, their, pure takeover of a human being.
Right, right.
Just for their own enjoyment, and it doesn't mean that their life means nothing.
And Bundy, that's funny, you said that, the pure takeover of a human being, and Bundy has mentioned that, if I could stop.
Yeah.
And it was just the wording that caught me off guard. Oh, wait a minute, what he just, if I could?
Yeah.
Well, I can.
Yeah.
Why can't you? So maybe there is something that has indeed taken him over, and I'm not talking about no fucking demon or nothing, it's his motivation in life, basically.
His soul motivation.
It's his soul motivation in life to feed this desire. Okay. As weird as it is to knock a bitch out. And he's had, he's done, and sorry, ladies, but that's just how I talk sometimes, when I'm in the heat of the moment. But,
right.
would kill a woman and then turn around and have sex with him.
Yeah.
So he was involved in the necrophilia.
Yeah, but remember what he said during his first crime is that he had already had consensual sex with the woman, and he got off. And so he did what most men do. Like they always say, the most honest 10 minutes of a man's life are the 10 minutes after sex.
Yes.
He actually said he sat there and debated with himself, should I kill this person or not? And I just want to let it go, because he had already had the sexual thrill.
Mm-hmm.
Once he sat there and that thrill came back over half an hour, 45 minutes, then he got the urge to kill.
Mm-hmm.
If you satisfy the sexual desire in that person, they're going to be level-headed for about 10 or 15 minutes. It's that runs their life. It's their sex drive that runs their entire life. When those balls get filled, it's like filling up a fucking gas tank in a car. It goes until it's expended, man.
Right. And and that's actually very articulately said, and a great point nonetheless, because forgot what the hell it was. I mean, I had such a great point. I really did.
I do it all the time, man. I really do.
Oh, God.
I forget all the time. Right at the moment, too.
Why does this always happen to me?
It's age, man. We're getting there.
It's age. You just That's what I'm blaming. Throw me under the bus. No, he... What were we... See, this is horrible.
Talking about his first victim is where, you know, he was debating to himself.
Oh, I remember now. I remember. I had to think for a minute, man. You just got to give me a second sometimes. That's the thing, man. You know, how many times have people, you know, been, you know, you walk up, you're in a store with a cashier, and this is no offense against cashiers, but, or just people in public, period. And you just think, man, I could reach out right now and just slap the fucking dog shit out of you. I could crooked, you know, make your fucking, slap the fucking teeth right out of your head right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
That, you know, he was fighting with something like that, but about 1,000 times greater.
The most.
I mean, just wanting to, you know, I'm really fighting back the urge in a serious tense, fighting back the urge to fucking kill you right now.
Right.
That is something I don't think most people, you know, really battle with. And but this was Ted Bundy.
And people have to get really deep into the sexuality and the history of it to really understand a serial killer. It's the most aggressive drive that a human being has, especially a man, is a sexual drive. I mean, it's either whether you're into science or you're into religion, both of them agree, you know, that is, you know, the be-all, end-all you know, to create, to keep...
Sure.
You know, populating
reproduce.
The earth.
And right.
Rather you think that we come from, you know, like we're no greater than bacteria who also do that.
Mm-hmm.
All animals do it. We do. And that's why it feels so good. You know, it feels good because you're supposed to use that.
Right. And you're supposed to do that.
That sexual drive in people takes over. And then that part of reason that we use in that scenario at, you know, with a cashier or whatever, our reason takes over, whereas theirs don't.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, our sense of reason goes, well, if I do that, man, I'm just going to get in trouble. And it's really the trouble is the only thing that's keeping you from doing it.
Yeah, a lot of times it is. Because, you know, in that split second, you start thinking about what you have to lose. One being your freedom, two being maybe your family that you may be leaving behind, you know. So you vote against it.
Yeah, you do. You just use reason and you don't do it. Whereas these serial killers just don't seem to use that or have it to use. And if they do, they use all that they could use for reason on learning how to manipulate and work people.
Ted Bundy was an absolute genius.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had a lot of help.
Master manipulator. I'm a master baiter.
Yeah, me too, all the time. But I don't watch porn while I do it, so I'm not going to kill anybody.
We are also available for children's parties. No, Ted Bundy, master manipulator.
Yes.
I mean, he not only took the stand, he defended himself, which is a big no-no. One of the things they teach you in law school, you're a dumb lawyer already if you try to defend yourself while just being a student of law.
Yeah.
And... he is very sneaky.
Yeah.
Escaped federal prison twice.
Twice.
And when you look at the newsreels of him being brought back, he's smiling.
Yeah.
He's just got a big smile on his face.
Not only did he escape, he killed people
when
he was out
there. He killed
people
after he escaped. Yeah. And when they found out about, I think, his first escape, when he lost weight and snuck up through air ducts or whatever. And, he was 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Literally in Chicago. And he was... you know, escape from, you know, I think, was it California? Was it out in California?
I don't know. I don't even remember.
1,000 miles from Chicago west.
Yeah, it might have been Utah.
Could have been Utah. So, 1,000 miles away. Oh, wait a minute. Where the hell did Bundy go?
Yeah.
He's in Chicago prowling.
And yeah, and that's what I think people really got to keep an eye on. Most of these serial killers turn out to be geniuses. They're super brilliant people. They outsmart cops. They like to write letters to the cops, and they just outsmart them. They like outsmarting them. These people are not stupid.
Son of Sam did it. Berkowitz, yeah. That is.
They're not stupid people, man. They're smart.
Yeah. Zodiac Killer did it as well.
Yeah, Jack the Ripper.
And how better way to take and really taint punch the system is being put into a federal prison.
Yeah, I'm
and escaping twice.
Yeah, escaping twice and then going out and killing right underneath their noses.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, just, yeah, it's insane to think about.
I mean, that's a total taint punch.
Yeah, because most people would think, well, I'm going to escape from prison, I'm going to go out, I'm going to move to South America or something. Nope, he went back to doing right what he was, right where he left off.
Yes.
He didn't miss a beat except for that little bit in prison, and he went right back and did it again.
And here's one thing that, you know, he was very young, too. Mm-hmm. Only 42 years old.
Yep. That's how old I am. Watch out, ladies.
Oh, my God.
I'm coming to get you.
Get you. Yeah, you know, 42 years old. I mean, that's 42 years old, you've had a 4 to 5 year, 4 to 5 year, you know, killing spree. You've escaped from prison twice,
right,
and you're 42. I feel like shit right now about what I've done with my life.
Right. It's like that music ought to be playing in the background for him at his execution. Feels like we made it.
Man,
he fulfilled his life. He did what he wanted to do. Whether, I got to choke for a second. But you know, he's not like Vlad, man. I can't try to turn him into a hero.
No, I can't either, and I won't. But
I'm just trying to humanize him. And how would you ever know? Because so many of these serial killers are just, man, they look like the most trusting people, and they sound like it. They're, you know. And a lot of people, you know, they know when they're being manipulated or whatnot, but these guys make it so subtle that you may not even realize it.
Yeah, you don't. You may have talked to a serial killer today.
Yeah, you might have.
You really don't know.
Yeah.
And the thing with Bundy is that, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, Gacy, clown makeup or not. Okay, it kind of looks a little fucking crazy.
Right.
I could picture him doing some heinous shit.
Right.
Berkowitz,
mm-hmm.
I can picture him doing some, you know, pretty crazy shit.
Yeah.
Ramirez and Night Stalker, you know, I could picture, you know, a lot of Dahmer.
Yeah.
Can picture them doing some really. You look at Ted Bundy and you're like, who's this yuppie bastard?
Right.
I you know, you just don't see it. And I think that was part of, like we talked earlier, that was part of his manipulation. Not only did he have, you know, some knowledge in law, some knowledge in the way people think, he also had, you know, charisma. He could drum up the charisma and the charm. He had the good looks to go with it. And, you know, boom. There's a recipe for manipulation, and you have an appetite to kill.
Yes. Insane.
It's absolutely insane.
Our reasonable side says that it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they might think we're crazy.
Right.
But there's more of us. And I think it's good to use reason. But sometimes you need those kind of killer thoughts and instincts to save your family or something. I don't know if it's just bad wiring. What would you call it? You know, that serial killers just show no empathy at all. Like, they could sit there and tell you their story in an interview.
Yeah.
Like Dahmer did. He did it. I remember a couple other ones that I can't remember their names did it. You know, And I won't put Charles Manson in there because he is not
a serial killer. No,
but they seem to don't mind.
Yeah. No, they don't. They have little empathy for themselves, for anybody else. Yeah. They're narcissistic.
Oh yeah.
You know, sociopaths. I mean, we could throw all kinds of shit on them.
I think within the last 20 years, the phrase, he put up a good front, is what we would say today. He put up just a massive good front for months at a time.
Massive good
front. If they had to. You know, anything to get their target, anything to fulfill that need, that sexual drive where, for whatever reason, murder plays a part in their sexual drive, and who knows why. Who knows?
And you know, I just want to, you know, throw this out there. I know we didn't, you know, get into, you know, the whole life of Ted Bundy. I think this is more interesting, you know, because he's not your stereotypical serial killer. But I also want to throw this out there real quick. Marie's mom... They are Indian, and here I'm scrolling down and look at that picture, Bobby. I mean that's her mom, and that's just, you know, perfect.
Yeah.
As far as what he looked for.
Yeah.
But her mom and obviously her aunt, who both had interactions with Ted Bundy, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that instinct.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's what it all boils down to.
Yeah.
That instinct, whether you are a serial killer or whether you're a potential victim.
Yeah.
And the instinct with these two ladies, Marie's mom and aunt, came from... an Indian, a native, I should say, a native background, that being Crow Creek Sioux in South Dakota. That is where their origins take them back to. So they have these, what you were mentioning, these instincts that you just can't get rid of.
Yeah.
You can't legislate these out of my head.
Right.
You know, just like you can't legislate these instincts that we all have, but some fall short in trying, you know, in repressing them and using logic and reason.
Yeah. Well, indeed.
So it was that Indian. It was that Indian. I'm sorry. It was that native, you know, ideology and background, that instinct
that
you know, caused her aunt to, you know, lock doors, that caused, you know, Marie's mom to you know, no, I don't get in cars with strangers.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't going to happen to me.
The same kind of tribal instinct that she used and is the same that he was using against her to get what he wanted. And it could happen in any tribe or clan or anybody throughout history where this is a learned behavior that is passed on. You know, people always wonder how these animals, like spiders, are born and they just know what to do. And these animals, it's just instinct. We all have it, but we've lost it a lot over centuries of indoctrination and, you know, society. Whereas we would always use these instincts, you know, and hundreds of thousands of years, nothing was a big deal about killing for people. You know, rather it was an enemy, and nothing was also a big deal about, most people knew how to avoid that type of person back then. So she's using that instinct. Her instinct won out against his. She was more grounded, and I think a lot of natives probably are a lot more grounded than most people.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah. You know, 100%.
She knew something was wrong.
If
you ever sense anything is wrong, always trust your instinct.
Always,
trust the gut.
Always trust that instinct. Yeah. That gut feeling.
You're never going to go wrong by doing it.
Never. Yeah. And again, I know we didn't talk again a lot about.
Well, hold on.
Deb.
I got to preference that. Sure. Unless you're the serial killer, then please choose reason.
Choose
don't you go by your instinct. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, man. Talk to somebody, you know.
If you think you may be a serial killer, trust your reason. Don't go by instinct.
Yeah, just, you know. Yeah, don't. Try not to.
Try not to.
I know it's impossible, and it's
always
going to be
there. And if you do it,
there.
Don't do it in my neighborhood.
Yeah. No, don't, please. No, actually, if you do it, please do it in Washington, D.C.
You know, all right, again, you know, this wasn't so much a history lesson on Ted Bundy as it was a discussion into the mind of someone like Ted Bundy, who grew up in a very Christian family. Again, as we heard during the break, in his own words, and you know, things went awry, or things didn't go awry, or what causes, you know, a person to take and become more in tune with that natural instinct, as well as, well, not being able to fucking control it, and not being able to find that reason. So something normally happens existential, like, you know, maybe family issues, but that wasn't the case. With Ted Bundy, though, it did have, you know, a little bit to do with some a girl that in college that he was very much, loved, and they were, you know, intimate. The girl, on the other hand, thought it was just a college fling. It was just, you know, college sweetheart kind of deal. Boom, it's going to come and go. Ted did not feel that way. She broke it off. That kind of, I think, changed the whole way his brain worked there. You know, he was still core the same person, but maybe those instincts were tweaked a little bit, when it came to that.
I can see there's definitely going to be a trigger for it. Yeah, I think it's a good way to go, you know, talking about it this way. There's a lot of Ted Bundy stuff out there.
There is.
I mean, anything you want to see, there's interviews, there's movies, there's a lot of stuff with Ted Bundy. So everybody's talked about that. But, you know, the one thing is they always say after a serial killer kills somebody, we're going to find out what shakes in their head, what's loose and stuff, but they never do it.
They never do it.
These kind of conversations might, you know, need to be sparked so that, if nothing else, you need to know what to look out for, maybe. And if we can find out what that is, you know, maybe it's even somebody's kid or something who's 16 years old and he's starting to show, you know, who knows. But, you know, I just get tired of people always saying that, you know, we'll find out what it is that rings their bell. And they're sitting there trying to tell them, and they ain't even listening. Mm-hmm. And it never gets out, so I like conversations
it's
like these.
It's
kind of
like this podcast. We get out here and just nobody listens. Well, hey, no, I'm sorry. The four of you listening right now, I love you guys. No, I mean, that, and, you know, I think that's kind of, you know, wraps this whole podcast up in a nutshell, because that's what we're getting at. You know, why did they do it? And I think we touch base on a lot of things. Yeah. It's instinct as to maybe why,
and the things that are hard to fight.
Existential,
yeah. The sexual drive is so hardcore.
The sexual drive
that people, when they're, you know, that cheat on each other, like when a man cheats on his wife or vice versa or whatever. They're in that moment, and they're thinking, I shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
But the drive is so strong that they do it anyway.
They can't.
It's
can't
a strong enough
help
drive to betray your closest friend on the planet.
Absolutely.
And it can drive your life in a lot of cases, like it does with these people.
Yeah.
You know,
in most cases, you know, when you're speaking of that, you know, with serial killers, you know, their sexual drive also has a violent overtone. So there is always violence that maybe it's it's the violence in a lot of times. I'm not going to say maybe because I know it was with Dahmer, you know, for instance. With Bundy,
Monday.
it was a little bit of both the sex and the violence. But with Dahmer, it was the violence that brought about the sexual gratification.
Yeah.
He would you know, kill one of these, you know, men, and then, you know, sit around and jerk off.
Probably have the best orgasm,
right?
Ever.
That he probably ever had.
Yeah, as bizarre as it sounds,
it's
to people
very
with reason,
bizarre, man. But you know,
what else could it be? Maybe it's a topic that really needs to be talked about. Maybe.
And I think it's intriguing, nonetheless.
What makes people tick?
And that's what it's always been for me. You know, I was 15, 16 years old reading books about Jack Kevorkian because I was interested in death. I was interested in, and I don't consider him a serial killer, but it had something to do with suicide, and I had some things going on that would have made me be drawn to that, okay? And so, you know, I've always kind of been interested in that darker side, if you will. But anyway, last thoughts on Ted Bundy, my friend.
Oh, there could be,
what do you say?
There could be tens of thousands more of them just like that. Could be your neighbor, could be anybody. Not to scare anybody, but it could be you.
But it is scary.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something that I think everybody's got in them. It's just most people, who knows? He's very similar to a lot of them in a lot of ways, but he's set apart because of his looks, his availability to get with women and stuff, and it made him notorious.
Yeah,
you know, because he was very smart. Remember what the judge said after his sentencing. Mm-hmm. Remember that? He said, "You would have made a hell of a lawyer. I would have liked to have you practice underneath me." He said, "But you chose the wrong way."
Right. That's an interesting thing to say when you're getting ready to sentence a serial killer.
Yeah, he was fond of him. He thought he was brilliant.
Right.
And he was very smart. He
was, and we're not trying to shed a good light on Bundy because he was a fucking monster.
Yeah, and let's not forget what Einstein said. There's a fine line between genius and psychopath.
And that's, to me, genius, because it makes so much sense.
Yes.
Again, I want to thank you, Bobby, for sitting in for Malice, as he's taken some well-needed rest after his new addition to the family.
Yeah, it's so awesome.
And, you know, all the holidays and everything, so... get rested, Malice.
Yes,
again,
indeed.
Thank you, Bobby.
Always fun.
And I'll always try to have a good time. I'm Otis B. Dreads. You can listen to previous podcasts if you want after this one. Who knows? No, I thought it was a good podcast, man. I thought we talked about some good shit. But you can listen to any of our previous ones. Now, of course, Bobby is a special guest. We may get him in here as a fixture. Who knows? We'll see what happens. At least on some good serial killer shit. Jack the Ripper show, you can almost guarantee Bobby's going to be on that one.
I've been looking into Jack the Ripper for the past 25 years.
That is awesome.
Yeah. That's my stuff right there.
All right. So we may have, we are going to have Bobby on our, on a Jack the Ripper show.
Oh, that'd be fun. You might need 5 hours for that one.
We may do some, you know, part one, part two.
There's a lot to that.
There really is. And we've talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
So, for Bobby, I'm Otis B. Dreads. Don't forget to check out again. I tried to say it earlier and got sidetracked. Go figure. Go to Night of the Living Dreads .com. You can check out previous podcasts. Don't forget to check out our brothers and sisters over there, GoreHoundsOfHorror.com and GoreHounds of Horror on Facebook. You can check out, they have a page, and then they have a group, which, you know, requires rituals and blah, blah, blah in the woods, like I mentioned earlier. But no, You owe, it's a closed group, so ask to come in, check things out. You're going to love it. I want to thank them guys over there. They've been awesome. So until next time, we have H.P. Lovecraft coming next week. Thank you, Drew, for your suggestion. Your life's dream is coming. Hopefully not. Your life. Alright, we're out of here.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.